different values are going to yield different solutions. And what I'll suggest is that cooperative housing is a solution to problems that arise in housing people. And so we'll work into that in terms of what those problems are and what the solutions are that are provided by specifically Madison Community Cooperative's housing program. We'll talk a bit about MCC's structure, its internal structure, and how it operates and what makes it sort of the interesting housing program that it is. And then I'll conclude by telling you about some of the things that we're doing right now in the Madison community. And please, at any time, feel free to interrupt with questions and, or comments. I think as we're talking about these different models and of thought and looking towards the future and thinking where we're going as people, I think it's important to remember that we're dealing with constructs, ultimately mental constructs, models. We're dealing with language and assumptions. We're dealing with vocabulary and figures and images about the way that the world is and who and what people are. And when we're talking about cooperatives, then we're necessarily dealing with the notion of values. And cooperative implies some sort of contrast, cooperative versus what? And I'll suggest that the contrast is a cooperative mindset versus a competitive mindset. And that basically our economy is driven by a competitive mindset. And the cooperative mindset serves not necessarily as an antidote to that so much as an alternative to that. Historically speaking, fairly recent alternative, at least in American economy, and one that probably holds, if not the solution for moving forward, holds some solutions for moving forward. And again, these different value sets and these different models are going to yield different solutions. So I think it's important to just outline what those differences are. I'd say that whereas the competitive mindset is dealt more in terms of parts and isolating parts, that the cooperative mindset deals more with wholes, with integrated wholes. As Greg mentioned, the cooperative mindset tends to be a cooperative system of doing things can be very messy, can be very slow, whereas the competitive system of economy tends to be very quick and efficient, almost ruthlessly efficient. The competitive mindset deals a lot with law. I would say it's law-abiding, it's document-abiding, whereas the cooperative mindset tends to be more empathy-abiding, I would say, or feeling-abiding, perhaps folks resonating with each other more as opposed to resonating with an abstraction of a document. The competitive mindset certainly unleashes the power of the individual and does so with that great efficiency, whereas the cooperative mindset tends to unleash the power of the group or community as an organism. The competitive mindset, in a sense, entitles the individuals living within it to be dismissive, both of other people around them, sort of like a I mentality or a me against the herd mentality, whereas the cooperative mindset tends to be far more inclusive. In the competitive mindset, a person is entitled to dismiss certain consequences of actions, of group actions. You're entitled to ignore the effects or the consequences of things that you do. Whereas in the cooperative world, everything is right there in your face. There is no ignoring because there is no getting past the people that are part of the system into which you're in, with which you're cooperating. The competitive mindset tends to deal with absolutes, I would suggest, absolutes that can be defined in terms of language and be codified in law and document and contract, whereas the cooperative mindset tends to deal more with tendencies, things that usually work, but there never seems really to be an expectation that anything is universal or will always work for all people, as a, in a sense, a greater respect for the diversity of interests in people. And the competitive mindset, finally, tends to be very, I'd say, isolating or isolated. People are separated from one another, self-separated from one another. Again, that me versus the world mentality. Whereas the cooperative mindset is far more, to kind of use the word from the modern era, more networked, perhaps more organized. People are dealing with one another organically as a unit. There's no doubt that the competitive mindset works economically. It absolutely works. It has created the wealth that we see around us. It's created the modern infrastructure and hot and cold plumbing and modern building insulation and cars and all these wonderful products of the modern era. But I think that we're finding out that we're running up to the limitations of that, that we've discovered that while it can do certain things, it can't do everything. And so there may be new mindsets that we need to embrace in order to meet some of the challenges that we're facing, because we see that even within the competitive mindset, as effective as it's been economically, we still see people enmeshed in poverty, we still see violence, we still see concentrations of wealth and great disparities of wealth. We see in Madison, we see homelessness, despite this tremendous boom in construction where there's really, the problem wasn't a shortage of housing, but a surplus of housing and not enough people to move into it. Nevertheless, we still have this scourge of homelessness here in Madison and around the country. So if we have these different sets of values, I think that we're going to have different consequences from those values, different assumptions of those values in terms of who we ought to work for, what the purpose of work is, what the purpose of economy is, what the purpose of housing is, what the purpose even of community is. And I would say that under the competitive mindset, the primary driving assumption is that a person works or labors to maximize their individual gain as constrained by law or as protected by law. Whereas in the cooperative assumption, individuals work to ensure wholeness amongst constituent members of a community as discerned ultimately by empathy as opposed to law. And so there's just a striking contrast of certain mindsets that go in to these two different systems of solving human problems of production, of distribution, of allocation. And so the solutions are going to be different. I'll suggest that Madison Community Cooperative is ultimately a solution to problems in housing. When we're dealing with the issues that come up in affordable housing, I need to find my next slide. That those contrasting assumptions between the competitive mindset and the cooperative mindset really do play out very clearly when you start looking at the cooperative housing model. Madison Community Cooperative is a co-op. It's a housing organization, and it's also a charitable nonprofit. We're organized as a cooperative. A cooperative is an organization or entity that works to the benefit of its members rather than seeking profit for outside investors or profit seekers. Madison Community Cooperative is also a housing organization. We're comprised of roughly 200 members of all ages, all backgrounds, all different types of employment status, educational status, men, women, many different sexual orientations, personal orientations. Here in Madison right now, we're made up of 11 houses that are located in the Isthmus and downtown area. Our smallest house has about 8 folks living in it, whereas our largest house has about 32 people living in it, and we're fully occupied. We're also a charitable nonprofit, which means we are tax exempt. We're a 501c3. We're also property. So we're income tax exempt as an organization, and we're also property tax exempt as well, which is a great benefit that is garnered by our members. When you actually look at the value of our real estate holdings here in Madison and what the property taxes on those would be, if we'd have to account for that actual property tax valuation in our budget, it would blow our budget out of the water. So there's a real value of being organized as a nonprofit. The co-op was organized back in 1968 by representatives of 5 independent co-op houses here in Madison that met for a convention very similar to this out in Washington, D.C. And when they were out there and discussing with one another, they realized they had problems in common that for maintaining stability in cooperative communities or intentional communities. Those problems tended to be things along the lines of unseasoned management, people who have to take on the actual roles and responsibilities of landlords and property managers, but really had no experience in doing that, typically over commercial-grade properties. If you have a house that can house 32 people, that's a pretty large property. That's not a single-family dwelling. That's a commercial-grade dwelling. There are typically, in the intentional communities, there tends to be a high degree of turnover, people coming and going, phasing in and out, leaving, reemerging, and coming back. Because of that high rate of turnover, there tends to be a loss of institutional memory. you may have your box of things that have happened, but when you don't have the people there that can simply remember how we solved that problem last year when it came up, or what this individual in the house really needs to be happy and successful, that can be something that just leads to the destabilization of an intentional community like the housing cooperative. There tends to be a lot of interpersonal conflict within intentional communities, and not necessarily good ways to cope with those interpersonal conflicts. And those conflicts can have a tendency to not just destabilize the community, but to just drive people out of it. There also tends to be in intentional communities a good deal of income instability as well. I think because of the mindset of the folks who tend to be attracted to the communities. I wouldn't describe it necessarily as sort of the stably employed bourgeois, if you want to look at it that way. It tends to be folks who are more marginalized, perhaps live on the edges of society a bit more, and are attracted to that community, perhaps even as an aspect of a community or housing of last resort. So MCC deals with, as a housing cooperative, as an organization of housing cooperatives, these folks came together and identified these difficulties, these destabilizing qualities of intentional communities, and said, well, what can we do about this? How can we come together and create a sense of federation or a cooperative of cooperatives to support one another and lend to one another the sorts of help that we need to make sure that all our houses will benefit from? And so they came together and created this nonprofit organization, which lends that institutional support. So we solved that problem of institutional memory by having a small but professional staff that can oversee aspects of management, of finances, of membershiping and contracting, and of building maintenance and property management. They were able to alleviate the problems of high turnover by standardizing processes of contracting, creating very formal processes of contracting, similar to market rate contracts. All of our members are on a year-long membership contract, which really is a lease for tenants in one of the buildings. They were able to address the concept of the loss or the destabilizing force of loss of institutional memory by having this central repository that will hold all the documents, that will have staff that are familiar with those documents, that will have essentially serve as that library of information that the houses can come and draw upon as they're dealing with their different management concerns. They were able to address the issues of interpersonal conflict by creating formal processes of resolving conflict and creating a mechanism whereby folks from the outside can come in and create a place for the folks who are in conflict to come together and resolve those differences. And then they were able to deal with the issues of income and insecurity, not only by creating a rental structure, which is very affordable and very fair, but by also having a system of working with folks who maybe have a sudden change in their income. And the organization has a large enough institutional wherewithal that it can really take those individuals as they come and tailor their payment plans, their rental payment plans, to their circumstances in a way that's approved by the membership at large. Madison Community Cooperative also addresses problems that come up in terms of affordable housing generally, which tend to be problems of access or lack of access, lack of financing, poor locations and poor sites. Usually when you're dealing with affordable housing, the types of properties that affordable housing programs can simply buy, not always, but routinely, are in inconvenient locations. They may be removed from city amenities and city services. They may be located far away from transport, from public transportation, from jobs and so forth. Other problems that tend to come along with affordable housing programs or providing affordable housing are simply management of the housing. A lot of folks that are coming to affordable housing programs are first-time home buyers who maybe don't have experience with the responsibilities of ownership over their own property. And another problem that Greg alluded to is this notion of post-occupancy support. And I think it's important to think of housing really as a verb as opposed to a noun. Really, once you get that individual into the home, their act of housing has just begun. That's really the easy part, the long part. The hard part is ensuring that they're going to be stable, that they're going to be able to meet the challenges and responsibilities that come along with being either a homeowner or a responsible tenant. So Madison Community Cooperative is able to address those problems in terms of lack of access. As I mentioned, our locations, our co-op houses are all located in the Isthmus and downtown area, and that's actually codified into our bylaws. Our office is over on Williamson Street, just about a mile east of here, and all of our properties have to be within a 3-mile radius of that office, which really makes it convenient for not only for staff to be able to just get out to the properties and work with individuals, but because the organization is so integrated, the community is so integrated and reliant on one another in terms of its self-governance, which I'll turn to in a minute, it allows for people to get at one another. All our meetings are held in our member houses, and so that really, our, yes, sir?
Is that 3-mile range established by you or by the city, or how did you?
That was established by the MCC membership when it organized the organization. That's written right into the co-op's bylaws. We were able to resolve issues or approach issues of the lack of financing insofar as our members are able to get into the are able to secure tenancy by paying a $250 membership fee and then a small security deposit, and then they have access to the housing at that point. They don't have to go out and get individual mortgages. They're not having to go out and do large security deposits, and so we really are working with folks of limited means and just having MCC, the organization as a whole, bear the burden of financing increases that accessibility. Our site, yes?
So I'm a little confused. You talk about getting mortgages. Are your people buying the cooperative housing, or most of the tenants?
They are tenant members of the cooperative. When MCC goes out to buy a house, it as the organization goes out and takes the mortgage to buy the house.
And do you have regulations you need to abide by as far as your screening process, who you can bring in and who you can't, and how do those affect your work?
We sure do. We're subject to fair housing laws, and I'll turn to some of this in a minute as far as the internal operations. We're subject to fair housing laws, but other than that, every house has the autonomy to create its own membership and processes where they bring folks in, they recruit individuals, they interview them, usually over a series of meals and dinners, and then they make a decision as a community who they would like to live there, still subject to fair housing laws. So they're generally screening for people who are likely to succeed within a cooperative setting. And then we also have the backstop of our staff support that can help with that in terms of screening and ensuring compliance with fair housing. We provide a good deal in terms of housing management and the actual aspects of here when we're dealing with issues of tenancy and landlord law or issues of maintenance. We provide to all our members those staff supports and resources for ensuring compliance with fair housing and doing trainings around that. Providing maintenance supports, which is my own role in there. We've got a couple of folks in-house who do our in-house construction work for us and who I dispatch to various places to take care of the homes. And so we're able to help the members maintain their homes as well. And then in terms of post-occupancy support, there's not only the support of staff who is there at all times to help with the routine issues of property management, but then there's the support, most crucially, of the co-op community as a whole, not only your members in the home, but also the membership at large is distributed through all our homes. So individuals are never alone. In terms of how our structure works, we're self-governed by the membership. So it's sort of a paradox. The members are both tenants, but also the landlords and property managers over their own buildings. The governance is exercised through a board of directors. The directors are nominated and elected from each of the member houses. And each house gets either one or two representatives to the board, depending on its size. The general membership at large meets 3 times a year, and at one of those meetings, they elect the board officers, who are also part of the board, and then staff is also part of the board, as not voting members. The board exercises all forms of formal self-governance over the organization in terms of generating and approving the annual budget, all aspects of policy, all aspects of resolving grievances, formal grievances, interpersonal conflict between the members, conflicts between the house and the organization. All that authority is rested in the board of directors. Now, Greg made an excellent point about the land trust board, and this is a pretty important contrast. Whereas the land trust boards have that tripartite differentiation of their board members. The MCC board is exclusively board members, and the, I guess this is being kind of candid, the types of instabilities that he discussed about when you have a board that's constituted solely of the members, that certainly does, that dynamic certainly does obtain within an organization whose board is made exclusively of members. This is something that we're working with constantly with our board because we have such a high board turnover as members are coming and going. And we're having to train members a lot and provide those types of trainings so that they can serve effectively within that governance role and separate their own interests both as an individual member and as a member of a house from the interests of the organization as a whole. And then our last piece of structure that we use to work with our members is called our Individual Issues Committee, which is a board level committee that works with individual members who come onto financial problems and are unable to pay. And they will sit down with that individual and work out an individual payment plan that the individual approves and that the committee approves and that the house approves, that allows that person to essentially make payments according to that plan in a way that keeps the house budget stable but allows that individual to continue living there. So we go to great lengths to ensure that we're preventing the addiction for the long term. Any questions so far?
Do you have evictions?
We do have evictions. We do. They're rare. Maybe one a year. They're pretty clear cut when it happens. Somebody who hasn't paid for 6 months and refuses to leave, for example. But it's a long process. It's intended to be a long process. But yes, it does happen.
I just wanted to add that we do, there isn't another conference in the room until 11, so we will have time. It is now 10:32, so we will have a little more time for questions, that sort of thing. But I wanted to add, with a member-driven organization, I'm a member of MCC at Phoenix Cooperative, and I'm the maintenance officer for that organization. Basically, I represent the membership in supervising Michael Carl. But all of this starts and ends with membership. Because, it's really on membership to, want to and then follow through and participate in the overseeing of this structure. And it is something that we focus on, intently in our, in the meeting process and that sort of thing of bringing in new people. You have to want to live in a co-op house, you have to be able to live in a co-op house, and you have to, then follow through on that commitment. And we, we make sure of that. Because if we're going to all rely on each other, we have to all rely on each other. Have to add that one.
And it really does come down to that at the end of the day. There's no getting around the people in the organization. And MCC, like any other cooperative organization, is going to be as strong as its weakest link, so to speak. So we go to great lengths. I mean, at the end of the day, we have these houses here, but really the houses are just the backdrop for the cooperative, which is the membership itself. And there we have a tremendously strong membership.
Can you describe the age and sex and gender and income disparities in the books?
Our bylaws state that 80% of our members have to earn 50% or below Dane County median income. So that's where we're able to secure our charitable nonprofit status. We're dealing with folks that are at the very low end of the income gradients. The bulk of those folks are down in the 10 to 30%. Now some of that is in a sense artificial insofar as the closer you get to campus, the more student heavy the housing is. As far as the number of students in the house. And so students typically tend to be low income as well. But by that stipulation, 80% of our folks are at 50% or below median income. As you get closer to downtown, there's likely to be a higher proportion of students. As you get away from downtown, it's more working adults, couples, families. We're subject to fair housing laws, so our homes are open to anybody who's interested in living there and who can successfully membership into the home. It's likely to be a good candidate for cooperative living.
How do you handle personnel structures? you work for several houses.
Right.
Is there a director then that's your supervisor? Each house membership group your supervisor, or how do you do that, Dan?
Well, ultimately, we as the three staff are hired to carry out the professional functions that the members would otherwise have to property management. Ultimately, the three of us, I'm one of three, we have an individual who deals with all the financing of the organization, an individual who deals with all the membership and contracting, and then I deal with the maintenance units and that type of contracting. Given the way that the review process works, ultimately, I'm subject to the review of all 200, we as staff are subject to the review of all 200 members in the organization annually, which is kind of an intense thing to go through, actually. And it is a very careful dance, because we don't have a central director. We have the staff, we have the board officers, and then the membership. Ultimately, we work to the benefit of the whole membership, and then are directly supervised by our respective officers. Board officers, but we don't have a central director. It's more of a hive mind kind of mentality.
So the three of you work kind of as a core leadership staff.
Yeah, I'd say more management, and then our board officers are more the co-op leadership.
And one of the board officers would be responsible for maintenance.
Right, he's right there, sitting behind you. Actually, yeah. And so every staff person has a respective officer, and then we have one additional officer who would be the equivalent of our board president, who's called the coordinating officer. And that individual is responsible for just oversight of the organization as a whole, calling special meetings, advocating on behalf of the co-op publicly and so forth. The co-op in its 45 years have had staff that work very poorly together, in which case you can have a very dysfunctional organization when those staff dynamics take over the dynamics of the membership. Right now, we are blessed with an excellent staff, and we all work fantastically together. Thank goodness, because we all are in the same office looking at one another all day. We're all about 10 steps away from one another, so it's very effective. So it's a little bit different, you know. I mean, none of us really have anyone looking over our shoulder, and so it's really, you know, in order for the staff to be successful, I think they need to find people who are generally self-motivated and honest and, you know, committed to the well-being of the membership as a whole.
What about, say I'm a member of the co-op, I have a room, or however that works. You know, if I go through some sort of emotional period in my life, I feel something like that. How does that work?
Well, if you have kind of a tantrum and put a hole in your wall, if the members of the house, if someone in the house is handy enough to repair it, they can do that, or the individual can, or the maintenance staff can come in and do that. The folks that we have, the two individuals who I supervise, I can dispatch to go and do that. Ultimately, our maintenance policy states that any member that hurts the room is accountable for paying for it, ultimately.
Are you still operating with all the shared meals and shared little work details?
Yeah.
I was in La Florian in like 1980.
I think everyone in Madison has lived in La Florian. Everywhere I go, I see people living in La Florian. That's one of our houses over off of Langdon Street. That's the 32-member house.
Yeah.
And it's one of the oldest. It was one of the organizing members of the organization.
I can answer
both of them. I think Christian is a member of the
organization. I'm also, at Phoenix Cooperative, I'm also the work job coordinator, meaning that I attend to the work job system in the house. We schedule, you know, dish shifts, we schedule cleaning shifts, we schedule, and cook shifts and that sort of thing. And then everybody else also has that we all share in those things. But we also have a structured job over that, which is your primary work job, which would be like paying bills on time or making up budgets for the house or, you know, seeing to the individual maintenance of just the house. And then, you know, those sorts of folks, like if you're paying the bills, you also meet on the finance committee with MCC, with the whole of MCC and the other representatives of the house. If you're doing the maintenance, you also meet with the other maintenance coordinators of the other houses. So it's MCC definitely serves as like a hub for the spokes that go out to all the other cooperative houses. And it's a lot about exchange and sharing.
Does each house pay its own electricity or utility bills?
They do. That's a great question. So every member within a house pays rent into the house fund, into an aggregate house fund. About two-thirds of that is then sent off to Rome, so to speak, into MCC as the organization. And that's what pays for staff, for all our institutional expenses, insurances, our consolidated mortgage, pays for our legal expenses, all our operating expenses, and then the maintenance fund as well. And then about a third of it, but that remaining third stays with the house and pays for electricity, pays for food, internet service, and so on.
How much surplus do you have for expansion? I mean, in financial. I mean, your boards are making the decision to keep the cost low,
right.
So you don't have much surplus for expanding.
We do. The co-op is the model is very stable and self-sustaining. We have a significant cash reserve. And we have a pretty huge asset base. Our asset to debt ratio is very favorable, and banks come to the co-op constantly. A lot of banks in town want to be our primary lender. And so we just, in fact, reconsolidated, refinanced our existing debts, which will open up several hundreds of thousands of more dollars for us that we can draw upon to go buy additional housing. And that's in addition to our pretty substantial in-house cash reserve.
You had said that your membership, you have members outside the houses, or do they all live in the houses?
Well, our articles of incorporation do allow for a Class B membership that can be voted in. The members proper are all Class A members, and then there's a Class B membership of essentially alumni or folks who might be interested just in the organization and who can membership in by a vote of the board for that. Those are very few and far between. So the bulk of our members are Class A members living in the homes. Do you have something you want to
take? Oh, there's also, for the individual houses, based on our own policies, for Phoenix Cooperative and many other co-ops in the system, we do also allow for food membershippers, meaning that, you know, you don't live in the building, but you can participate in our food that's, you know, communally available.
Right,
to keep costs down in that way too.
Right, because within the house, every member has their own room. It's community style, so every member has their own bedroom, but then they share all the common facilities, kitchens, living rooms, bathrooms, and cook meals together in common. So it's a great model, especially that shared finance model. Insofar as with every house, well, it's kind of the advantage of Federation. Every house pays into this common fund, and sometimes there are net recipients, and sometimes there are net, what would you say, contributor, thank you, to that fund. And so in any given year, for example, last year, two of our houses really needed full kitchen remodels, and neither of them individually could have come up in the course of, say, a year or two with the $30,000 or $40,000 it took to carry out those remodels. But having that pool of funds in aggregate in the background, we were able to carry out that work then to the benefit of the houses. So it's a way of keeping people's individual costs down while maintaining this reservoir of funding that allows for substantial and necessary work to happen.
Besides the housing cooperative, are there other cooperatives in town?
There are non-affiliated housing cooperatives in Madison.
But do you have food co-ops? Grocery stores in
the Sure, the Willie Street Co-op, which is right across the street from us, and they have another location out in Middleton, is a food co-op.
And do you interact? We try to.
One of the principles of cooperatives worldwide is cooperation amongst cooperatives. So we always try and drive our business into other cooperatives, and we can. And we're very blessed with that here in Madison. There's an extraordinary number of bicycle co-ops, food co-ops, printing press co-ops, taxi co-ops, union cab, you know, it's a taxi co-op.
Is there any formalized interaction?
There's a Dane County co-op we called on yesterday.
Yeah. Yep.
No. I think I shouldn't speak more to that. I don't.
What would be an average rent someone would pay?
Say $250 to $350
a month.
Yeah, on the high end, about $500.
Has Section 8 ever moved along for you?
No, we don't take any public funds.
Okay.
Although we're trying to, actually, which leads me to my next item here, unless there's some questions about next steps and things that we're doing right now in affordable housing.
So someone's like 10 to 30% of median income, from poverty income. You know, that $250 could be a very significant amount.
Right. Right.
And you're not worried about Section 8 to be used to assist.
I'll get to that in just 1 minute, because I have something pertinent and direct to say to that in terms of what we're trying to do right now. The MCC membership and board of directors right now is working to reach out to members of Madison's homeless community in particular, and we're trying to affirmatively open up our housing opportunities within our housing for members from the homeless community. And there are several different approaches that we're taking to doing that. One is simply to make space in our houses and create essentially just a reservoir of rooms that are available for individuals that are referred from different homeless service providers who have been in a sense pre-screened by the folks that they're working with as being likely to succeed in a cooperative setting. Now those individuals would still be subject to the same membership process, but they would bring with them that institutional and case management support that we're not competent to provide. Really our competency is in helping intentional communities stay stable and successfully manage themselves. So we're reaching out and developing cross-agency partnerships for folks who can bring those personal and social support services to those individuals. Another model that we're working on that we just applied for a grant for Dane County from Dane County to develop is to create a supportive community where all the individuals in that home will be drawn from the homeless community. And here we're targeting especially the alleviation of youth homelessness in Madison, which is just really an exploding problem, especially since we don't really have a runaway shelter here in Madison. And we're hoping that by targeting that group that we can turn, say, a several weeks or month long or prevent a short-term homelessness problem from turning into a long-term homeless problem that takes perhaps years of intervention to cure. A third route that we're working actively on and just really probing to see where there might be some resource is to create a rental payment reservoir that can support payments from those very low-income individuals, specifically to support that MCC payment portion that I mentioned before. So we're trying to create a way that we can take our already low rents and reduce them, say, by another two-thirds for very low-income individuals that are moving in by saying, okay, you have the rent here would be $300. You can afford $100 of it, that third. That's just going to stay with your house to help your house continue to operate. Your house would still otherwise be accountable for coming up with that other two-thirds and making that payment back into the organization. And it's right there that we want to bring the subsidy money in so that it's not subsidizing individuals, but that house's payment back into the organization to support mostly capital expenses like maintenance and our institutional mortgages. So that's the idea. The second half of that is that the expectation would be that as the individuals move into the house and as their life will stabilize and their ability to pay rent, to pay the full rent will increase and their need to draw on the reservoir will decrease. Such that if we can start with, say, $250,000, which is what I'm going after right now, that we would be able to stretch out that reservoir funding over a number of years and really help many individuals with that gain access to it. So we're working very closely with Operation Welcome Home right now, which is another homeless advocacy group here in town, to develop these supportive community housing. For purposes of the grant, we've partnered with Operation Fresh Start, which is a youth education training program here in town, as well as the Youth Services of Wisconsin, formerly known as Briar Patch, who will serve as those sources of referral and then ongoing case management support for the individuals that are there.
Sure, I think you have 5 minutes for a little break between the two.
Well, so I think that cooperative housing, cooperative systems in general, can yield models and new solutions and new opportunities as the world becomes an increasingly complex and interconnected place. I think MCC is showing that models that in the past have tended to just fill the gaps for people that aren't otherwise served by the conventional market are becoming, in a sense, more mainstream and maybe the wave of the future, especially as we're dealing with growing disparities of wealth and income distribution. And I would encourage you all, especially, to support MCC's efforts to help alleviate the cause of homelessness, or the scourge of homelessness here in Madison. I think that's a very exciting route. Our members are very excited about it, and it's new, it's a little bit scary. We really want to make sure we're responsible for it, or with that work, and that we're really dealing with people in a culturally sensitive and responsible way. But I think that we're going to be playing a significant role in the near future here in helping alleviate that problem.